I am praying that this is over on November 3rd and it's not dragged out.
President Trump has kept every promise he has made to the American public.
If Trump wins, like, I don't know what's going to happen to, like, me and my family.
This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. It's good to have you with us. 1 week to go before Election Day, and in North Carolina, the votes continue to pour in. According to the State Board of Elections, about 3.5 million people have already cast their ballot. That's roughly half of all registered voters who have already made their picks. Of course, behind every ballot, there is a voter wielding the pen and filling in the bubbles, making their choice for who they want to see in office. On this episode, we wanted to check in with some of those voters. What's on their mind this election season, and how do they feel about the whole voting process? So today, you'll hear from liberal voters, conservatives, new voters, political organizers, and more. So gear up, get ready. Let's go vote. First up, we're going to hear from Olivia Zalecki. She's 23 years old and is a recent graduate of NC State University. She's a registered Democrat and is voting as such. But, she says, in her opinion, politics writ large means so much more than just election season.
You know, politics is not necessarily just voting. It's how we are taking care of our community. Politics really is in every single facet of our life. It's, you know, where do we live? You know, what places are available for us to shop at? All these different sort of things that has really opened my eyes and made me hyper involved, I would say.
Zalecki works for the nonprofit North Carolina Asian Americans Together. The group advocates for more inclusion of Asian American and Pacific Islanders. That group is also often referred to as AAPIs. And Zalecki says that more representation, in part, depends on a fair election.
Speaking in a personal capacity, things that I've definitely been thinking about is we've all seen the news on, you know, is this going to be a peaceful, you know, transition if, you know, the election does go one way? Or, oh, hey, what are results going to look like with mail-in ballots? Is there going to be a big delay on getting election results? I think that that is something that has definitely been weighing on me. And I know a lot of other young people I talk to is like, are we going to have results the day after the election? You know, are we going to be waiting weeks? Like, it feels uncertain. I think that that is, on a personal level, something that can be a little daunting and scary. But on the flip side of the coin, I think another thing that I really have been thinking about is what it means to engage outside of these, you know, outside of this one season, right? Every 4 years, what does it mean to have consistent engagement and to look out for our communities year round? And I really want to, I guess, like, work on encouraging people within my own circles to be either not so disenchanted with maybe an outcome that they're not ready for, but on the flip side, not also being like, all right, did that, you know, just like time to dust my hands off and say, see you in the next 4 years, because I think both of those have some danger to them. I'll be voting early and in person, which is something that I am passionate about, but also I feel like it's almost an effort because I'm a little nervous about all we're hearing about mail-in ballots, right? It's the first time that this has been done on a mass scale nationally. North Carolina doesn't have the best track record from what I've been seeing on the news with keeping up with a lot of this stuff. So I want to say I am excited to vote, but not necessarily viewing it as the be-all, end-all process. And I think that that has been a really big mind shift between 2016 and 2020 election for me, is viewing it as like, yeah, I'm voting for these candidates. I think that they're going to be the best ones given what we have in terms of helping the AAPI community, immigrant communities, but they're not the be-all, end-all. And I'm not counting on them to fix all of our problems. And, you know, it wasn't one political figure who created a lot of the tension that we're feeling. And I think that we really have to delve deep into who we are as a nation and individuals to say, okay, you know, this is deeper than political candidates. This is real systemic problems that we have to solve and that we can't count on political figures to be the be-all, end-all.
Okay, let's now hear from a North Carolina voter who self-identifies as a conservative. Meet Alexi Negru.
I am registered Republican. So Donald Trump and Mike Pence, it's on the top of the ticket, on top of my importance list.
Negru lives in Morrisville and owns a computer repair shop. He's lived in North Carolina for about 16 years. Back in the mid-1990s, his family immigrated from the Republic of Moldova which was a former state of the Soviet Union. He says in the early 90s, after the fall of the Soviet Union, his country fell into a state of chaos.
On my mom's side, we came from Protestant Christians under the Soviet Union. And starting from my grandmother and then my mom, they were persecuted throughout their life by the communist regime, and we were granted a status of refugees.
By 1995, Nehru's family made its way to the United States, and he says ever since he became a citizen, he has voted Republican.
Consider myself more of a conservative rather than just party loyalist. To elaborate a little bit more about it, basically, as soon as we immigrated to the United States, I really fell in love with this country, with its founding, with its principles. I actually took time to read even some of the founder's letters. And that basically, number one reason what made me a conservative, because I believe this country is super unique. So that's on one hand. Another hand, religious conservatism as well. Not as much as I need more rights than others as a let's say, a Christian or religious person. But I want my rights to be protected from any intrusion of the government and not, you know, my rights not being taken away. So that makes me as well more of a on the conservative side. 4 years ago, my decision voting for Trump was not easy. My primary motivation for voting for him last time was I was appalled by the special interest and corruption in Washington, D.C. And voting for Donald Trump, even though it was risky and it was a lot of unknown, how will he govern? Will he actually stand behind his promises? But I took that chance and I thought, you know what, we need some serious change in Washington. And now, after 4 years or 3.5 years of him being a president, I basically was surprised to see that he actually governed very conservatively and actually doing most, if not all, that he promised on the campaign trail, which is very rare for any politician. So that only solidified my support of him running for re-election. Now, it doesn't mean that I approve everything that Donald Trump is saying or tweeting, but I try to look at the deeds more than the style and more than just words. One of my biggest concerns in the way politics are happening these days in the United States is we don't believe in the goodness of each other, you know, the both sides. A lot of times it ends up being name-calling and canceling each other or just appalled. How could you, you know, support this candidate? You know, I find that it's kind of appalling. And the fact that, for example, I have some friends on the left side, right, who absolutely convinced that Donald Trump or his supporters are racist and they don't care about justice, they don't care about, you know, a little guy, they don't care about immigrants and stuff like that. There is nothing further from the truth, basically, that, you know, Trump supporters for some reason automatically are this or that, you know.
Now, for some North Carolinians, voting isn't an option, but that doesn't mean they aren't still extremely invested in the results.
I'm actually a DACA recipient, so I'm not eligible to vote.
This is Dani Baena Bustos. She's a senior at Meredith College in Raleigh and has been encouraging all of her peers to get out there and vote.
From my perspective, this election is super important, whether it's about like immigration or like racial equality or the environment. There's a lot of big issues. And it's kind of stressful to be in my position where I can't vote. But at the same time, I feel very hopeful because I feel that a lot of people that are my age are very excited and energized to vote. And I think, honestly, COVID probably has made that even more powerful of a feeling for a lot of people right now, because we've all been at home for several months, hopefully, and We have a lot of time to be on the internet and educate ourselves, especially with like support of like the Black Lives Matter movement increasing and just seeing how people are not wanting to wear masks. And just this year has been very like dense. So over the course of the last 4 years, I've had to kind of get more and more comfortable with sharing my story. In the past and just growing up, my family has always been like very private about like our immigration status and like me and my older sister having DACA. So just through like the last 4 years of seeing everything going on in the world, I'm like, well, I think that's kind of the main way that I have to reach out to people and to get people to vote, because like my livelihood is on the line. Like the future of DACA is the most important thing for me, because even just recently, like Trump has made it so that we have to pay like our $500 renewal fee every year instead of every 2 years. So like, I feel like most DACA recipients are from low income households, and most of our parents are, you know, undocumented, so they have lower income jobs. So it's like a burden, and that's like the most like direct thing for me. Like if Trump wins, like I don't know what's gonna happen to like me and my family.
As you're aware, as a loyal podcast listener, North Carolina is a key battleground. And within our swing state, there are 100 counties. But very few would qualify as swing or bellwether counties, areas that could go red or blue, counties that could even yield a split ticket. 4 years ago, there were four such counties that were carried by Donald Trump and Roy Cooper. Nash County, which includes Cooper's hometown, Jackson County, with the campus of Western Carolina, New Hanover, county seat Wilmington, definitely purple, and Granville County. Granville is just north of Wake and borders Virginia. My colleague and fellow politics reporter Rusty Jacobs has been visiting Granville County this election cycle and talking with some of its voters. I caught up with Rusty to talk a little bit more about his reporting and started by asking him why Granville is so notable.
Granville is an ex-urban county, right? It's got some city centers, Oxford, Creedmoor, and also lots of stretches with farms, pastures in between some of those more heavily populated areas. It's also a swing county, and you look at first presidential results, 2012 and 2008, the county went for Barack Obama. And then in 2016, it flipped and ended up going for Donald Trump by about 2 percentage points, maybe a little bit more. So, and you've got about 39, close to 40,000 registered voters. That is a sliver, and it's the ex-urban county that political scientists and observers talk about because of its makeup. It's got a sizable minority population as well as a white population. And it's growing. It's growing. You see people moving in from some of these more populous areas like Raleigh and Wake County, Durham, and moving to Granville County for the wide open spaces.
You've spoken to a number of voters from Granville. I'd love to highlight one or two of them. Where do you want to start?
So you walk around Granville and you're liable to run into a registered Democrat here, registered Republican there, and a registered unaffiliated voter. But what I didn't find was anybody who was really, really undecided. I spoke to some unaffiliated voters who all seemed to lean Republican, had voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and plan to do so again. Voters like David Quinn.
It really comes down for me, you know, do I like Trump person? Not really. Do I like what Trump is doing from a policy perspective? Yes. So I think a lot of people kind of conflict the two. I separate them out. And in terms of what he's doing, his approach to China, his approach to jobs, there's just a lot of things that he's doing that I like specifically, you know, personality aside.
I also spoke to Penny Stockbridge. She's unaffiliated, but Republican leaning, voted for President Trump in 2016, will do so again this year. She's a real estate agent.
I'll definitely vote Trump. Simply because I have a financial background and I have a really solid understanding of what it is we're looking at right now from the housing and the financial aspect. And I don't see anybody else who's willing to just stand up and go, we have to fix the breadbasket that keeps this country going. And that's small business. That's American family. That's... I mean, I've never seen anybody do what he's done for the minority populations when it comes to unemployment. People have to work. We watched COVID destroy how many people's businesses. I believe he believes in business, and I believe he believes in hard work, and I genuinely support that he believes in education. Those are vital.
So, you know, it is made up of solid blocks of registered Republican, Democrat, and unaffiliated voters. But even with those partisan divisions or those partisan boundaries, it is very hard to find anybody who is undecided, truly a swing voter. In fact, in my conversations over the course of a few days in the county, I came across one voter who is a registered Democrat. Her name is Waltie Blackwell. I found her working cutting hair at the Major League Barbershop in downtown Creedmoor, and she is struggling to make ends meet.
I would like to see more affordable health care for you know, middle-class working people, older people that's worked, that may be on a fixed income.
And even she said she insisted, when I spoke to her before the first presidential debate, she insisted she was keeping an open mind. She had not made a decision. That being said, she clearly faulted President Trump for divisive rhetoric, for contributing to a hostile atmosphere that raises concerns for her as a mother of three children, including sons, black sons that she's worried about growing up.
It's hard trying to break it down to them for them to understand it. And a lot of things going on in the world now, they don't understand. And it's heartbreaking because the way that they were raised, they know that some of the stuff that's going on isn't fair or isn't right. And I just want them to grow up in a better world where they don't have to be afraid where they go or how they look to be accepted.
And she's also clearly seemed to think that Joe Biden might be a better defender of broader access to insurance, might be a better champion for working class people like her. But shortly before the first presidential debate, she had not made a decision. I actually went back to Granville County recently, and I met back up with Waltie Blackwell. And after that first debate, and by many measures, a terrible debate in terms of civility, she had made her decision, and she is going the direction of her registration, which is Democrat. But again, most people I spoke to had already decided whether they were going to vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris or President Trump and Vice President Mike Pence.
All right, Rusty, you and I are chatting on a Monday afternoon. I'm confident we're both tired. We're both ready to see this thing through. Hopefully there are results here in 8 days' time. What are you watching most closely, and or what are you most excited about as we head down the stretch?
One of the things that's emerged lately is research coming out of Tufts, in the University in Massachusetts. They have a research center that has been looking lately at the youth vote. And we're talking about voters 18 to 29 years old. North Carolina is right there, just behind Florida and Texas, with the highest number of that age range of voters voting early, casting early ballots. And as you know, North Carolina has been seeing unprecedented numbers in terms of early in-person as well as absentee by mail votes. And it's now one of the top three in terms of early in-person and by mail votes from young voters. That's going to be a key demographic. You know, research shows that those voters tend to be independent, but maybe left-leaning. And with North Carolina in the balance and polls still showing maybe a slight but within the margin of error edge for Joe Biden, just how significant will the youth vote be in the end? And will it make a huge difference in the outcome in North Carolina?
That was WUNC politics reporter Rusty Jacobs. All right, let's hear from another of those young voters that Rusty just referred to, one of those Gen Zers.
My name is Miller Coffey. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I live in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Coffey is 25 years old and a registered Democrat.
They work for the nonprofit Piedmont Environmental Alliance. So naturally, Coffey says climate change and the environment is a big thing on the mind this election season. Another big thing Coffey is worried about? Voter suppression.
I would say that my number one concern is making sure that people are able to vote in a free and fair election. And so one thing that really concerns me are some of the red flags around voter suppression. And I think that what we're seeing is that people have seen that there have been people who are threatening the integrity of this election. And as a community, I think we're standing up and we're saying, you know what, no, we're not going to let this happen. And so even in places like Texas, which, you know, before now was not really known for its great voter access, we're seeing that organizers there on the ground have created a situation where it's actually easier for people to vote than ever in that state. And so I feel really inspired about that. But I also just feel really worried because I think in this nation, we have a history of voter suppression that reaches back way, way, way beyond this election cycle, before COVID, before this current administration, before all of that. And so what we're actually having to do is to think about the systems that we've set up and their power to affect a free and fair election in this country in this moment. And so I'm really concerned about voter suppression. I think it's so important to vote for people who hold the values that you have. And I think it's also important to vote for people who will be good representatives of what we want. You know, just like as a person who's in Gen Z, one thing that I see a lot is that there's been a lot of conversation about who is the perfect candidate. Do they support everything that I want to support? And I think it's so great to strive for having candidates that really fit with what you want. But I think it's also important to consider the candidates that listen and respond. You know, a few years ago, I remember there being kind of a big conversation about certain candidates flip-flopping on issues. And I have really thought very hard about this. And one of my observations is that changing your mind is not a bad thing. And if you have new evidence that suggests something different than what you thought before, then maybe you should change your mind. And I'm looking for candidates who are listening to science and listening to reason and listening to facts, and also listening to people's lived experiences to inform where they stand on these issues. Because I think at the end of the day, we really need empathetic people in office who are ready to listen to constituents and do what we want.
All right, so I said we can't cover every swing county in the state, but at least we can mention one more. Alamance County is home to competitive and costly legislative races. A Republican in the state house is fighting for re-election, and an open state Senate seat could determine power in the upper chamber. I was recently driving back to the Triangle from the mountains when I made a pit stop in Alamance, county seat Burlington, in order to talk with a couple of volunteers at Republican Party headquarters. I sat down with Kobe Fogelman, who you'll hear first, and Catherine Reed, a schoolteacher. Donald Trump was on the TV in the background, speaking from Allentown, Pennsylvania, and Fogelman and Reed sat at a folding table, discussing politics. Just a note, you'll hear a doorbell also in the background at times. There were just a few people coming to pick up yard signs. Now, entering the home stretch of this campaign, Fogelman says he's feeling pretty confident about a Trump win.
You know, from what I've seen the last couple of months, you know, definitely I foresee a Trump victory. The gubernatorial race, I'm not going to be able to tell you that until the night of the election. I think both candidates have got their, you know, their issues to work out, and I think it's going to really come up to the undecided voter of who do they want for the governor. And I think, you know, I'm not going to be able to tell you that till probably the day of, how I'm feeling. Really, that's been the one race where I'm like, I can't really lock that in.
Yeah. A lot of conversation about the safety, the security of the election, from mail-in fraud
to Russian disinformation. I mean, there's plenty of stuff in the air, right? What's your level of confidence in whether or not we will have an accurate count come Tuesday, come a week from Friday? I mean, are you confident that the results are going to be the results?
I'm confident. There's nothing really that I've seen that's going to, you know, locally especially that I've seen. I mean, everything locally is going pretty smoothly. Board of Elections has, you know, really sat there and told us, look, this is how we're doing it. This is, everything's going well. We're you know, doing our best to make sure we don't have any issues. So I feel confident we'll know the, you know, once the final results are in, though, that's probably what will be.
As we think about the landscape of politics here in 2020, if you were to choose a handful of several words to describe it, how would you describe 2020 politics in America to, and I'm being totally random here, to somebody who's visiting from Norway?
It is like a soap opera. It is like a soap opera.
Do you enjoy it?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes, you know, it just wears on you. I think with the pandemic that's happened this year, the election is as important as it is, because you are basically voting to keep America the way our founding fathers intended, or you're voting for communism and socialism. Them are your two options. And if you want to vote for socialism and communism, that's your choice, I understand. But I would implore you to do your research or go visit a socialist country.
You voted for Trump 4 years ago?
Yes.
How would you assess, you can go 1 through 10, give him a letter grade. Let's do a letter grade. You're a substitute teacher, not to be totally cheeky, but give President Trump a letter grade for me from your perspective across these first almost 4 years.
A. He's done everything he said he was going to do. Mm-hmm. Most politicians, when they're on the campaign trail, I promise to do this for you, and I promise to do this for you. And once they get in office, they don't keep their promises. President Trump has kept every promise he has made to the American public. And the only reason he may not have been able to keep that promise is because Congress has stopped him.
Of course, getting people to go out and vote is not unique to just a few places in the state. It's happening across North Carolina, including on college campuses. Imani Johnson is a senior at North Carolina Central University in Durham. She's also Miss NCCU and has been involved in student government. Recently, she's been helping her fellow Eagles get out the vote.
It's ever so exciting because for a lot of our students, this is their first time ever voting. And given that NCCU is one of the last HBCUs in the South with an on-campus voting precinct, we are doing everything in our power to ensure that our students, not just our students, but the community is getting out to vote and utilizing our precinct.
Johnson says due to her position at Central, she can't share how she's voting, but she says she hopes voters will use this election as a chance to get more involved in local politics.
So I'm thinking that everyone is going into this election believing that this is the time for change. This is how we get our states, our cities to recognize the value that exists in our lives and really getting government officials to see that it's more than just a position, but it's about the community aspect. So that's why I'm so proud that the city of Durham we have a great connection with our city council. I was actually an intern for city council, so I'm still working in that as well. So I'm really happy to have a connection with them. And I've realized that more and more people realize this election that government is about having that connection to people. So going in for voting now, I think more and more people realize that government is about those connections and those relationships. So that's where their mindsets are going. So they're asking, who is the candidate that will connect with me, who sees my issues as valid and will actually be working to advocate for those and create change for the communities that need it?
Thank you to the voters and political followers who spoke with us for this politics podcast. The episode was produced by utility man Charlie Shelton Ormond, and it was made possible in part because of you. Indeed, we are in a pledge drive. Notably, WUNC exists and thrives and has podcasts like this because of the generous listeners and donors who provide us with the resources necessary to cover politics in this fascinating state. WUNC actually receives more than half of its revenue every year from listeners. And no, we don't get any direct funding from the state. Some people are surprised when I tell them that. If you're in a position to contribute, five, maybe 10 bucks a month, you can pledge online at WUNC.org, or you can call 1-800-962-9862. And if you're not able or wanting to give, that's cool too. I hope you will continue to listen to the pod. On Friday, Becky and Rob stopped by to review the week in state politics, and a programming note for you. On election night, we will bring you special coverage as the returns come in. Join Will Michaels and me as we try to make some sense of the results. Less than a week to go. Thanks for listening. I'm Jeff Tiberi.
Eight hundred.
Can you say thanks for your support?
Thanks for your support.
Thanks for your pledge.
Thanks for your pledge.